I have found out beat news in depth for you.
Good evening and welcome to Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Moralia. It's May 22nd, Harvey Milk's birthday, and in California, that means it's officially Harvey Milk Day. California is the first state to recognize an out gay man with an official day of remembrance, so it seems only fitting that we begin tonight's show with the new executive director of the San Francisco GLBT Historical Society, Terry Beswick. And in the second half of our hour, we'll get you all set for this year's Sonoma County Pride Celebration, happening in just a couple of weeks. Sonoma County Pride Chair Chuck Ramsey is here to give us all the details. All of this is coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news, for this Sunday, May 22nd, 2016.
I have found Outbeat Radio news, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
This week, the House of Representatives passed a massive National Defense Authorization Act. And tucked inside is a provision that would allow federal contractors to fire employees for being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. The language slipped into the bill by Republican Steve Russell would dismantle President Barack Obama's 2014 executive action that makes it illegal for government contractors to fire or harass employees based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. In its place, Russell's provision applies a broad exemption that would open the door to contractors discriminating against LGBT people based on the contractor's religious beliefs. The government awards more than 2,000 contracts to religious organizations every year. Russell's measure would affect every grant, contract, or purchase order made by every federal agency, including contracts with hospitals, homeless shelters, colleges, schools, domestic violence shelters, and adoption agencies. And in Mississippi, the school's chief backed away on Wednesday from federal guidance to allow transgender students to use the bathrooms of their choice amid pushback from state leaders. Education Superintendent Carrie Wright said in a statement that her department would, quote, follow the lead of state leadership and take no action at this time. The department previously said it intended to follow the non-binding guidance issued to U.S. schools by the Obama administration last week. In a statement on Friday, the department said, quote, a safe and caring school environment is critical to a student's ability to learn and achieve. In response, Mississippi Republican Governor Phil Bryant urged state education officials to disregard the guidance, which comes at a time of escalating tension over the civil rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals. Bryant said, quote, because these decisions are better left to the states and not made at the point of a federal bayonet, Mississippi's public schools should not participate in the president's social experiment. The Obama administration's letter to U.S. schools has received mixed responses, and advocates for transgender students have cheered the directive, while conservatives have vowed to fight the administration's positions that U.S. laws against sex discrimination in schools include gender identity. And here in Sonoma County, Outwatch Wine Country's LGBTQI Film Festival will host a program of engaging and entertaining short films as the official kickoff to Sonoma County Pride on Thursday, June 2nd. The 11 films will be screened at the Rio Theater in Monterio at 7 p.m. Two films feature Sonoma County residents. Queer Habits, which debuted at Frameline 39 in San Francisco, is a documentary project following the Russian River Sisters chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence and those lives they've changed. Director Drew Denny and the Russian River Sisters will be in attendance. And Partners is a charming exploration of the communal sociability of same-sex square dancing and features Sonoma County's own Redwood Rainbows. The program will also include films produced by Bay Area filmmakers. San Francisco drag legend, fundraiser, and San Francisco Pride Parade's longtime host, Donna Sachet, is the dazzling subject of Sachet the Movie. You can get tickets and learn more at outwatchfilmfest.org. An Aging Together with Pride, an 8-week series for LGBT seniors, will happen on Saturdays, starting June 4th through July 30th at the Petaluma Health Center. This is the third series for LGBT seniors to happen here in Sonoma County. Gary Herms will lead the group that will prepare participants for the challenges and explore the possibilities of their later years. Aging Together is sponsored by a grant from the Sonoma County LGBTQI Giving Circle and the Sonoma County Human Services Department. You can learn more by calling 707-227-6935. And if you missed Private Lives, Private Lies in April, you have another chance to see it on June 11th. This original LGBTQ play, written by Outbeat Radio's own Dr. Diana Greer, will be performed at the Cloverdale Performing Arts Center in Cloverdale on Saturday, June 11th at 7 p.m. You can learn more and get tickets at cloverdaleperformingarts.com. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, May 23rd at 7 p.m., the Parents of Trans Youth Support Meeting will happen at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, May 24th at 1:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation at the Glacier Center. And for more information about LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all your 2016 Pride celebration information, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for updates from Outbeat Radio News all week long. For Gary Carnavelli, I'm Greg Moralia.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Somewhere in Des Moines or San Antonio, there's a young gay person who all of a sudden realizes that she or he is gay, knows that if the parents find out, they'll be tossed out of the house. The classmates would taunt the child. And the Anita Bryans and John Briggs are doing their bit on TV, and that child had several options: staying in a closet, suicide, and then one day that child might open a paper and it says homosexual elected in San Francisco, and there are two new options. The option is to go to California. Stay in San Antonio and fight. 2 days after I was elected, I got a phone call, and the voice was quite young. It was from Altoona, Pennsylvania. And the person said, thanks. And you've got to elect gay people so that that young child and the thousands upon thousands like that child know that there's hope for a better world. There's hope for a better tomorrow. Without hope, not only gays, but those blacks and the Asians, and the disabled, the seniors, the us's, without hope, the us's give up. I know that you cannot live on hope alone, but without it, life is not worth living. And you, you've got to give them hope. Thank you very much.
I always get chills every time I hear that recording. Of course, that was Harvey Milk, who would have been 86 years old today, and he's clearly one of the best-known LGBT heroes. But there's so much more history in our community here in the Bay Area, and the San Francisco GLBT Historical Society has been working hard since 1985 to preserve that history and to make it accessible to all of us. Joining us tonight is the new executive director of the GLBT Historical Society, Terry Beswick. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm excited to hear all about what's going on with the Historical Society. But before we get to that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be the executive director.
Well, that's a good question. I've been on the job now for just about 3.5 months, and it's been an amazing roller coaster already. It's a really great organization, and I'm very fortunate. I have a small staff, but I have a huge legion of volunteers that are academics and historians and researchers that are working with me to make sure that our history is preserved and protected and also is made available to the public and in displayed in ways that people can understand and communicates to them. So I signed up for this job a few months ago. The last 7 years I was working with the Castro Country Club in San Francisco, which is a small nonprofit serving LGBT people in recovery. And that was an amazing job. It was a little bit more low-key than this job, actually. We're serving thousands of people there, but pretty much on the, quiet organization, people coming in there who have problems with drugs or alcohol or wanting to help other people with drug and alcohol problems. So the reason I was hired for this job is because I worked there to sustain that organization and to build it. We raised money to remodel the place and expanded our program significantly. And also, I have a long history of working in activism and journalism around primarily AIDS, but always with gay-related organizations since I was much younger. Starting in about 1985-86, I became an AIDS activist with a little group in San Francisco called Citizens for Medical Justice. And it was kind of, you know, I'd studied theater in school, and so I was used to putting on shows, and that's basically what we did. You know, we'd get really angry about an issue, and then we'd pull together a little theater troupe, and we'd go out and put on a show on the streets and put on a skit, sometimes costumes, and, you know, always very gay and creative. And at the end, we'd often get arrested, and so and that way we'd make the papers. So, and, you know, we had some effect on some of the issues, sometimes just drawing attention to some issues. You know, the stakes were very high. And from 86 to 96, I worked with a variety of different AIDS organizations, primarily focusing on AIDS research. And actually, I think it's this summer, in July, will be the 20th anniversary of the International Conference on AIDS in Vancouver.
Wow.
Where the protease inhibitors results were released. And so I was working on protease inhibitors issues when I was in D.C. and in San Francisco. We didn't know what was going to work out, but and even at that time, you know, it was sort of like a soft news announcement in terms of its development. It was big. I mean, I wrote a story for the San Francisco Bay Times, actually, in 20 years ago in June, prior to the conference. And the cover was the word C-U-R-E, you know, with the E tilted, kind of stacked like L-O-V-E. So, you know, there was hope. There was a great deal of hope, speaking of hope. But the story that I wrote was in-depth, kind of looking at everything from, you know, PrEP, you know, which we have now. Of course, it is possible ramifications to that, lowering viral load to reduce infectiousness and all those things. And so that was kind of like my history. That was my passion. You know, I took a year or two off in the late 90s, and, you know, and I got involved in the recovery movement. So I've always been involved in working with nonprofits and governmental organizations and news organizations to try to, well, first of all, it was to survive, but also to sort of further our cause as LGBT people, as far as our equal rights are concerned. And so I'm really excited. This is, for me, it's kind of like a luxury job. You know, I'm very lucky that I get to work with all these brilliant people that have been involved in various causes and collect people's historical records and make those available. I think we've got like 200, we made a list recently, and I think it's like 200, books or documentaries master's theses that have been written largely with the materials that we have in the archives at the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco. And just measuring the ramifications of that is almost impossible. I mean, you know, things like the movie Milk, right now, When We Rise is
Dustin Lance Black's new film, right?
It's an ABC miniseries, and it's got several activists from the 70s who were became most active in the 70s in San Francisco, and it kind of follows their lives. I don't know the plot, but it's being shot. It was being shot in Vancouver and also in San Francisco. On location. And so they used our materials in the archives to sort of, you know, just do location work, making sure that it was all historically accurate and whatnot. And so we're very excited about that. And so my own story, you know, I'm 56. And so getting to this point where I'd be running this organization has been a long and circuitous route. And I was reading a little bit about Harvey Milk's story today. And somewhere was reading, saying that he had eight careers. before he became a politician. Not to compare myself, but I kind of had a similar story. Yeah.
Well, that, you've witnessed so much over the last five decades. I mean, Harvey's story was certainly a big part of that, but
right. There
is so much history that has genesis right here in the Bay Area in the Castro itself.
Right.
And you mentioned the AIDS epidemic, but talk about the impetus for the Historical Society being formed in the first place. It was about that same time in the 80s, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there were some precursor organizations to the GLBT Historical Society, but it started, there were a few guys who were involved. Actually, they met in Scott Smith's Harvey Milk's partner's living room, and they began having meetings there, and they were talking. You know, it was after the Anita Bryant stuff going on, and so there was a lot of anger, and Greg Pennington began researching news articles because he was just started collecting news articles and mm-hmm. periodicals and things like that, and he met with Willie Walker and Alan Berube in Scott Smith's living room and Gail Rubin, and they started putting their materials together. And And one thing kind of led to another, and it's developed into 800 collections of personal contributions of people's papers, organizational records, audio tapes, and videotapes, and all kinds of things. We don't collect books per se, but more like the source material that can contribute to books. And we've also done a number of oral histories with people, and we're going to be beginning a process of doing more of that, collecting oral histories from people that were around before or are active in historically significant events now. So that's how it started, and it just kind of grew, and it continues to grow. We started a museum, as you know.
That's right, and it was a pop-up originally, right?
Originally, yeah, we had the archives. I think we're on our fifth location for the archives that we just moved to this weekend, actually, but. Much larger and larger space that we're growing into, but so in the archives we used to do some exhibits in a conference room and that kind of thing. But I think it was about 7 years ago that we started having pop-up museums, and there was one you might recall in the corner of 18th yep. Castro Street, the old former camera store there, and. Actually, I went in there a couple of times and I dropped off some things because they were collecting donations, for the archives and for the museum. And they just put out an open call. So I cleaned out some drawers and dropped off things like, T-shirts and posters and things like that. And people still do that. We're happy to get it in an organized kind of way. But yeah, so we started the museum. And it opened about 5.5 years ago, and it's next door to Badlands on 18th near Castro. And so it's as I said before, it's relatively small, but we have room for – I think it's about 10 exhibits that we have in there right now. And some of them are rotating exhibits and some of them are more permanent, like the Harvey Milk exhibit. So we're very excited. We have about, I think it's 15,000 we had come through there last year, visitors, and about 60% of those are visitors from out of town or at least outside California. And they come from all walks of life. A lot of tourists, they come to the Castro to sort of check out the gays and, look at the naked guys or whatever, who are, by the way, not even gay, but they come down to the Castro and check us out, and they just want to see a drag queen or something like that, and they have nothing to do, so maybe they go down to the museum, and check that out, and so it's kind of cool that we have the opportunity to educate people and spark conversations about understanding our history. I just thought about I have a brother who actually lives right around here who some years ago, he just kind of blurted this out, in conversation over dinner one day that he thought that, gay people have only been around for 20 years or something like that. People actually believe that. Mm-hmm. And so for them to find out that, you know, our history goes back, you know, I mean, our recorded history goes back, you know, thousands of years, of course.
Sure.
But that we have documentation going back 100 years in our archives, and that, you know, that we have stories. You know, so the word gay hasn't been around for that long. The word homosexual even has only been around for, what, 150 or so years. But certainly, you know, we have same-sex relationships and transgender relationships, transgender people that have historical records that are we can show to people, and we can tell their stories, and so people come in there and they actually learn people's personal stories and in a way that they can identify with.
Yeah, no, it's quite a revelation. I was talking before we went on the air about a class I just brought there yesterday. Our police academies down for a cultural immersion, and then the LGBT studies students, and these are 20-somethings,
mm-hmm.
And they have not been exposed to LGBT history because it hasn't made its way into the history books yet,
right.
And so they're learning about Harvey Milk, who is such a big figure in our community. But as I told you, I said, how many of you know who he is? And two people out of a group of 34, you know, immediately raised their hands. And I thought, oh, my gosh, we're so far behind. But the history goes much deeper than that. Talk about some of the other groups that come through. I'm sure I'm not the only school group that comes down.
No, we have, you know, in the San Francisco School District, we have high school and junior high school groups coming through on a regular basis. Also just, you know, tourist groups, you know, led by other, like, tourist group leaders, and so they come through, and sometimes we have a docent who will meet with them, like you do, to show them around the museum, and we can't really blame people for not being knowledgeable, you know, if their only knowledge about gay people comes from, you know, television, you know, Will and Grace and American Family, and that's the extent of their knowledge. That if they're, as you said, if they're not taught in school, or if we don't have our history represented in history museums, in the
right.
Museum of American History, and, you know, where's the gay? And so so that's kind of like why we exist. I get very excited when I sometimes I just eavesdrop on people coming through there, or other docents will tell me, like you did, about what people say. And, you know, there was a couple, young lesbian couple that came through recently, and, you know, they're both of color and from just rural California, and they didn't know we were there, and they just happened to come in and walked through the museum, and they said, I had no idea that anything like this existed, you know, and they were so amazed that it was diverse, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we get a rap in the Castro for being just all about the gay white population,
right?
And and I think, you know, that actually has, I mean, the whole Castro has changed quite a bit over the years, of course, but so we make a special point of making sure that the diversity of our communities are represented in the museum and in the programming that we do there, because we come from everywhere, and, you know, as Harvey Milk used to often say, I mean, that's our strength. That's the amazing thing. That's the unexpected power of the gay community, is the fact that we do come from everywhere. And so, you know, we come from the Catholics and the Jews and the Protestants, and we come from the Black and the Asian and the Latino. And so those populations see us as part of their families and their neighborhoods. And increasingly, you know, we stay there, and we don't go to the gay ghettos necessarily, or we go back and forth quite freely, you know, as we become more protected by the laws, and by social mores are more accepting, I think, now. And so we're able to integrate and stay integrated. But the amazing thing is that, you know, we as gay people, we have empathy for other disenfranchised communities, because we've experienced discrimination and oppression. And so we're able to take that empathy, I believe, and share that, take that back to our communities, and defend other populations that aren't exactly like us.
Sure.
So I think that that's an amazing way that we sort of magnify the power of the power of gay.
Right, right.
You know.
Well, next month's Pride Month. We're talking about that tonight and talking about, you know, Sonoma County Pride coming up in just a couple weeks. It's hard to believe. And so June is really, I think, an ideal time. If you haven't been down to the museum and you haven't been down to the Castro itself, it's a perfect time to do it. If you haven't been down there recently, the sidewalk expansion project and the whole history walk is there. And so it can be a whole experience for you. And then to go to the museum. So tell us what some of our listeners might expect to see if they visit the museum in June.
Sure. Yeah, well, actually just this last week we had the first in a series of shows that we did drawing directly from the archives. We have a archivist, a researcher named John Rains, and he's also a preservationist of videotape, and he's taken a lot of the videotape home movies that we have in the archives and put together some shows. And so this last week he put together a show that was about Harvey Milk. And the amazing stories of the White Knight riots after Dan White was convicted of second-degree manslaughter,
right.
And so that we had the riots at City Hall to protest that, and it was just so cool to see this video footage of behind the scenes, the stuff that we didn't see in the news clips, you know, of the anger and the grief that people were venting, and the violence that was expressed, and you know, and so just to absorb that and sit there was really amazing. Anyway, the second one that he's going to be doing is actually on June 10th in the museum. And it's going to be more home movies from the archives, and it's going to be focused on Pride in the 70s. So you'll see, you know, Harvey Milk in that as well. Of course, riding in the parades after his election. I think it was November, right? In that the assassination took place in November in 78, right?
Right.
Which was like 6 months after I graduated high school, actually. So down in Monterey County. So I was aware of what was happening, but the sense of loss, even as an 18-year-old, that I felt back then. So. But I didn't get to participate in that pre-Milk, pre-AIDS, San Francisco environment very much. And so to go back and look at Pride in the 70s and what that looked like, I think it'll be really fun.
You won't see Facebook or Apple marching in those parades, right?
Probably not. Yeah. You know, and I don't even know if the mayor rode in those parades, actually.
Probably not. I mean, it was much more militant, much more still had a fight theme to it.
Right.
As opposed to a celebration.
Yeah, it did start as a protest, after all, with the Stonewall riots. And yeah, and then we have also in June, on June 21st, this one is actually going to most events that we have at the museum cost like $5, and they're free for members. But on June 21st, we're going to have a special benefit, and it's going to feature a conversation between Jim Obergefell and Shannon Minter.
Wow.
And Obergefell, of course, was the plaintiff in the marriage case where the Supreme Court, of course, legalized marriage in all 50 states. And so he's got a new book out called Love Wins, The Lovers and Lawyers Who Fought the Landmark Case for Marriage Equality. And so he's going to be talking with Shannon Minter from the Center for Lesbian Rights. That's on June 21st, which is a Tuesday, from 6 to 9 o'clock. 6 o'clock is $100 for VIP reception with Jim. And then from 7 to 9, they'll be talking and in conversation and also answering questions and reading from the book. And so we're very excited about that and proud to be having that there. Earlier on May 20th, we have a book about Pedro Zamora.
That's right, from MTV, remember.
Real World, right. He was an amazing activist in his young life and his brief public career, being open and public about being HIV positive. And, of course, this is before the treatments came out. So So there's a book out called Pedro Zamora's Sexuality AIDS Education. And so that's on June 14th from 7 to 9
Perfect.
P.m.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, and we'll have all those dates.
Yeah, you can check
that
on our website. On our website, too, at glbthistory.org. And we're a nonprofit organization, of course, and so we're always looking for donations to support our work with the archives and the museum. And a lot of other events. We actually had this last week, just 3 events at the museum. And so we have a very, very busy schedule, a lot of interesting events coming up.
That's fantastic. And it's right here in the Bay Area.
Right.
So tell us about, again, give us the website again where people can go to learn more about the museum. And then if they want to become members, where they can go to do that.
Right. So what you have to do first is you have to misspell LGBT. We're misspelled. And I think it's an archival thing, you know, going back to when we were founded. There was a moment in time where GLBT was the acronym that was most frequently used.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of stuck with it. And it's glbthistory.org. And you can check us out there and find out a lot more. We have an annual membership program, and it starts at $50 for the whole year, and that gets you into all our programs at the museum for free. You can also bring a guest to visit the museum whenever you like and access our archives if you want to dig around and do some research on your family, friends, or your own background. I just also want to make a pitch, Greg, that we are, now that we've moved this week into larger archives, we have more space. And so we are in particular looking for donations of archival records, you know, letters, correspondence, posters, ephemera for the, from people's experiences, whether it's just their personal lives or historically significant events that they participated in. 70s and earlier is great. We're also in particular looking for stuff from people of color and from lesbians. We just want to make sure that we have materials from those communities in particular. And so, and we're, you know, the older the better. Where our focus is on Northern California, but please reach out to us. A lot of people are getting older and they have stuff. You know, you can put us in your will to have your materials be contributed to us, and
awesome.
So we're very interested in that.
Fantastic. What a rich resource that we have right here in our own backyard. We've been talking with Terry Beswick, who's the executive director of the GLBT Historical Society. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks a lot for having me, Greg.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Harvey Milk would have been 86 years old today. Before he was killed, he recorded a final testimonial, an almost eerie prediction of what was to come. But his message continued to be one of strength and hope.
This is Harvey Milk speaking from Grammar Store on the evening of Friday, November 18th. This is to be played only in the event of my death by assassination. I fully realize that a person who stands for what I stand for, an activist, gay activist, becomes the target or the potential target for somebody who is insecure, terrified, afraid, or very disturbed themselves. Knowing that I could be assassinated at any moment, at any time, I feel it's important that some people know my thoughts. And so, the following of my thoughts, my wishes, my desires, whatever. And I'd like to pass them on and have them played for the appropriate people. The first and most obvious and most concerned is that if I was to be shot and killed, the mayor has the power, George Moscone, of appointing my successor on the Board of Supervisors. So I would like to have him know what my thoughts are. I have never considered myself a candidate. I have always considered myself part of a movement, part of a candidacy. I considered the movement the candidate. And I think that I wish I had time to explain everything I did. Almost everything was done in the eyes of the gay movement. the other aspect of this tape is the obvious, and is what should happen if there is an assassination, and that is, can that prevent some people from getting angry and frustrated and mad? But I hope they would take that anger and frustration and madness instead of demonstrating or anything of that type. I would hope they take it to positive, and I would hope 5, 10, 100,000 would rise. I'd love to see every gay doctor come out. I'd love to see every gay lawyer, every gay judge, every gay bureaucrat, every gay architect come out. Stand up and let the world know that would do more to end prejudice overnight than anybody could ever imagine. Urge them to do that. Urge them to come out. Only that way will we start to achieve our rights. I hope there's no religious services, whatever, but God, first of all, I hope there'll be no services of any kind whatsoever. I know some people are into that, and you can't prevent it from happening. They want to happen, but by God, nothing religious. I mean, until the churches break out and say the Anita Bryans have been playing gymnastics with the Bible, to the churches which remain so quiet, and the guts to get out and speak out in the name of Christianity or Judaism or whatever they profess, there are no services whatsoever. If anything, maybe just play that tape to Briggs and I, which is somewhere in the cabinet in the back, our cabinet. Just play that tape to Briggs and I over and over again, so people know what an evil man he is. So people know what Ali Hipper is like. People know where the seeds of hate come from. People know what the future is going to bring if they're not careful. And that's all I ask. That's all. I ask for a movement to continue, for a movement to grow, because last week I got that phone call from Altoona, Pennsylvania. In my election, gave somebody else, one more person, hope. And after all, that's what it's about. It's not about personal gain, not about ego, not about power. It's about giving those young people out there, in Altoona, Pennsylvania's, hope. Gotta give them hope.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth on KRCB Radio 91. I'm Greg Moralia. Pretty eerie tape. Well, next month is Pride Month, and in just 2 weeks, we will be celebrating Sonoma County Pride right here in beautiful Sonoma County. And with us now is the president of the Sonoma County Pride Organization, Chuck Ramsey. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it.
Great to have you back. We talked last year, just as you stepped up to take the reins. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence had backed away, and there was a chance we weren't going to have a Pride celebration at all. And then, out of the mist, you stepped up and you did it, and we had a great time. So give us an update about the organization and how things are looking this year.
First of all, I would like to say that Stephen Zollman stepped up at the last minute the first year. We had the celebration in conjunction with the Russian River Chamber of Commerce, very small, on the plaza. And in the past 2 years, we've really ramped it up with our team. I think what made it possible is everyone has a passion to make Pride bigger, to make it better. And if you can do it together... When we started, we didn't know what we were doing, and it was scary, but it worked out. We had fun at it, and when you have the right team and you can have fun at it, you can do anything. So we're still jazzed the second year as well.
That's really exciting. And just looking at the website, I mean, it's grown so much. Talk about the organization of it. Who all is involved now, and how is it operating?
We have chairs. We have a logistics chair. We have a chair of the parade. We have an entertainment chair. Obviously, we have officers. We have MCs that help with the events. We're getting more volunteers. We're getting businesses involved. And definitely had a large contribution by sponsors this year, which is making a difference.
Oh, that's good. It's got to make a big difference because somebody's got to pay for all of this, right?
You need it. It's costly. Sure.
So you're feeling like the organization is healthy and vibrant and sustainable.
I do feel it's sustainable. Again, whenever you're growing, you're going to have new people that might be on a different page to some extent. For instance, some people are happy with it being a small town mm-hmm. parade and festival. Others, such as myself, we look at the larger vision, pushing equality for LGBT people, not just in California or locally, but nationwide as well as worldwide. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish.
Sure. So the celebration this year is going to start on June 2nd. We talked about the film festival earlier, and it'll run through the 5th of June.
Correct.
So let's start there. Give us kind of a rundown of what the weekend looks like.
First of all, we're really happy to have Outwatch Film Fest this year at the Rio Theater. Not only is it good for enlightening the LGBT community, but it helps the Rio Theater, which is always can use a little assistance getting through. Friday afternoon, we have our first Friday art walk. That's followed by country western dancing. And that's always put on by Sundance Saloon from the city, which always does a great job. Saturday, there'll be a pool party at R3 with a beer bust. And followed by disco dancing at night at the Guerneville Betts Hall. Again, we're fortunate to have DJ Rotten Robbie returning for that. Sunday, of course, the parade starts at 11 in downtown Guerneville, and it's followed by the festival, which begins probably around noon afterwards and runs until 6 p.m.
Awesome. So let's talk about the parade. Tell us who we might expect to see marching down Main Street in Guerneville.
We're very proud of the Grand Marshals this year. We have Sister Spark of Plenty, who was one of the original founders of the Russian River Sisters.
Fantastic choice.
So that's good. Also pretty new on the scene, we have Chris Brocate from Clean River Alliance. This guy has gotten the community as well as many of the homeless behind him to clean up our riverfronts. In the past, I'd say 6 months, I believe he's cleaned up 150,000 pounds of trash.
Wow.
So that's awesome for a community grand marshal. And what I'm most proud of this year, which I think ties into our vision, is our celebrity grand marshal is Neil Gottlieb.
Wow.
I don't know if you're familiar with him. He was recently on Survivor.
Yeah.
But more importantly, a couple of years ago in 2014, well, I should say he's a co-founder of Local Three Twins Ice Cream, which, of course, is now available nationwide in mm-hmm. all 50 states.
Delicious,
so,
by the way.
Yeah, it's the best. So he's local. But in 2014, he climbed to the top of Uganda's highest peak after their president criminalized homosexuality. And at the time, I believe it was punishable by death.
Yep.
So he went to the top of the mountain, put up a flag, and then challenged the president to climb up there and get it. Okay, this year, in April, he placed a rainbow-painted outhouse with the trans pride flag at the summit of the tallest mountain in the eastern U.S., which just happens to be in North Carolina, of all places. This is an ally of the community, which I even think makes it better than, you know, being of the community.
Sure.
So for us to be able to honor him and his contributions, I really think is what we're all about, and it's just awesome. So he'll be there this year as well.
Excellent. Excellent. And so the parade starts at 11 a.m., right?
Correct.
And people should come down and bring their chairs and get their places on the sidewalk to get
probably about an hour earlier, at least.
Right. 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 And then after the parade, the festival takes place at the Guerneville Lodge, which I can't think of a better setting. I mean, it's right on the river. It's stunning.
Right.
Love it there. So talk about the festival a little bit. Who do you expect to be there?
First of all, I'd like to give a plug to Guerneville Lodge and the owner, Al Cooper. He has worked with Pride since day one, especially last year, you know, our first main year. He worked with us financially. I can't speak highly enough of him. And in this business, it's about developing relationships with the partners that you work with. So we always try to do our best at our end, and when we find people like him, it's awesome.
So some of the entertainers. I saw on the website Bobby Joe Valentine.
Right.
One of my favorites. He's going to be there.
He's back again. He's a Petaluma resident, singer-songwriter. He was great last year. He's Songwriter of the Year at the West Coast Songwriters Association, both in 2011 and 15. He sold 16,000 albums to date, and has performed more than 500 concerts. So
he's going to be on the Grammys one of these days, so come and see him now while you can.
It's good.
He's really fantastic. Who else is lined up?
We have DJ C. Lextra, who has DJed basically from Miami to Vancouver. We have The Front, which is a local trio of female performers from West County playing acoustic rock. We also have another local, Bobby Ellison.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bobby's been on our show a bunch of times. He's got a stunning voice.
Yeah.
He's really beautiful.
He's good. We have drag kings, drag queens for entertainment. It's going to be fun, and it's going to be something for everybody.
And so talk about that as well, because this is definitely a family event.
Right.
So you can bring kids. There'll be activities for kids to do.
There will. We don't have a separate children's section, but nothing that we do would be, you know, offensive to kids or families, and we certainly welcome them.
Great. And food and drink?
Food and drink, we have a large – we have more vendors this year than last year. We're doing really well. And I can tell you, you know – hopefully most of the ethnic spectrum in the food. The vendors will go anywhere from Wildwood Retreat to Peace and Medicine. So there really is something for everyone.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. So let's talk about Guerneville a little bit as the host town. If you haven't been out there recently, it's really seeing a rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was struggling, you know, during the recession, and there were a lot of businesses that were going out, and it's turned over. But, you know, there's some really great restaurants coming on board and new businesses, and it really – there's a vibrancy there now. How is the town supporting this event, and what's their involvement been for you?
Their involvement? Not only Guerneville, but Monterio is also benefiting. You know, we had talked about the Rio Theater and Outwatch coming on there. We're trying to work with local vendors, local businesses to make sure that they are at the festival. We have the Rio Take Two Cafe. They're also very active in Bay Area Rodeo Association. What the local businesses do for us, they obviously don't have the money that our large national sponsors do, but they provide whatever they can. They're vendors. They provide fundraising opportunities for us. They also provide volunteers, which we desperately need.
Well, and they're open, and they're providing support for all the visitors that come as well.
Right,
and,
right.
And so it's a chance to get some really, really great food, to get out of the sun for a little bit and get something cold to drink. And it's great that they embrace the event. At least it feels like they're embracing it.
They are. They are. And as I said, this year, I think they're more comfortable because it was successful last mm-hmm. year.
Great. Well, as we were talking about earlier, these events don't get put on with the graces of and the warmth of people's heart. I mean, it costs money to put this kind of event on every year, and you do fundraising throughout the year.
Right, yeah? Right.
So talk about some of the events and maybe some of the local sponsors. I know I saw that the Grayton Casino is once again involved.
Right. This year we put on more fundraising events. We have Give Back Tuesdays at Rainbow Cattle, and Rainbow Cattle Company has always been supportive of us. We had a Sisters Bingo event in Hillsburg recently. Last week there was an event next door to you at Grayton. So we're doing pretty well. I certainly want to acknowledge our two largest sponsors, both last year and this year, Grayton Resort and Casino. Not only do they give money and provide fundraising opportunities, but I'd like to acknowledge Brian Rogers. He's our logistics chair, and basically without him or Grayton, we wouldn't have an event. Large sponsor is Barefoot Wine and Bubbly, and in that regard, I'd like to acknowledge Randy Arnold. They provide and support more LGBT pride events nationwide and probably worldwide. So
no doubt. I don't think there's another winery that I see more frequently at, you know, fundraising events for LGBT organizations than Barefoot.
Right.
They're always there.
They're always. And, you know, Randy's local. So we're proud of that too. Alaska Airlines has also come through again this year. They're providing us 4 round trip air tickets to anywhere they fly worldwide. So wow. That's an awesome raffle opportunity and sponsorship, and we're excited.
Yeah.
It's good.
That's
it's
cool.
You know, and I also like to mention that we get smaller sponsorships, smaller businesses, individual assistance, and it last year it cost $35,000 roughly to put on the event. This year it's higher than that. So just by showing up at the fundraisers, bringing your friends, showing up at Pride, anything that you can do really helps the cause,
right,
and it's
so
appreciated.
So just so people understand, Sonoma County Pride as an organization is a nonprofit.
Correct.
Right? It's not a private business or a for-profit. It's a nonprofit there to put on the event.
Right.
So can people donate if they just want to give you money?
Certainly.
And where would they go to do that?
They would go to SonomaCountyPride.org, and the tab would be Join Us and General Donations. And just click on that. And it's easy.
Okay.
And we'd love to have the donations.
And so if you missed that website, we'll put it on our own website at outbeatnews.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page, and you'll find a link there. And you can also access it through the 2016 Pride Celebration page that we have. We have a special link, and we have all the information about Sonoma County Pride there. So you can go there. And you can go to the event and donate, right? You're asking for a donation at the door?
Certainly.
Or the gate?
Right. And also at the dances and the events that we have on Pride weekend.
So is there anything else coming up fundraising-wise between now and June 2nd that people can get involved in?
No, we just had the last fundraiser last weekend.
Okay.
Right.
So what about people hearing this, getting inspired to participate in the parade or have a booth at the festival? Is it too late?
It is not too late. Again, SonomaCountyPride.org. We have a parade tab and a vendor tab. Just click on it.
And so if you had a contingent that wanted to march in the parade, is there a cost associated with that?
There is, depending if you're a nonprofit. It's a little higher for businesses, but it's very reasonable, and you can pay online.
Okay. And what about booth space? Is there still room at the festival?
There is still room. I think we're up to probably over 30 vendors at this point, but there's still – Grenville Lodge has a lot of property, so
– Yeah, it's huge.
Right.
And so if you're a business and you wanted – you said, hey, this is a great opportunity for me to share my business and get the word out about what I'm doing, people can sign up and they can register, and there's a fee for that as well.
Right, right. And again, it's not much. We also – if you don't have a pre-set up, we can provide that. That is an additional cost, so it makes it easier.
But it makes it a lot easier because then you don't have to lug all that
right
extra gear out there.
And we also have, you know, not just businesses. We have nonprofits that have booze, government agencies. It's more of a educational and helping and outreach for the community.
It's really great. We've got a few more minutes here. I'm just curious. This is so much work to do this. Where does your passion come from?
I think it comes from obviously being LGBT, but also living in the river. I'm very passionate about the river. LGBT, it's been an LGBT getaway. I know Terry was talking earlier about LGBT history, and there's such a tie-in with the city and the river. I mean, people like Leonard Matlevich, Randy Schultz, Sylvester, they were all in the river. They had businesses in the river. So although it's Sonoma County Pride and we do have events throughout the 101 corridor, I'm passionate that the river retains pride.
Yeah. Well, we certainly appreciate it. If you're planning to come out on Sunday to the parade and the festival, which we hope you do, your Outbeat Radio team will be there again. We're really excited about being there. We're going to tape a live show that will air that night. And what we do with the show is we talk to all of you about what you have in the way of pride. Why are you there, and why are you proud? And so we would love to have you join us on the air. That is on Sunday, June 5th. It's going to be here before you know it.
Very quickly.
Chuck, I really appreciate you being on the show. We've been talking with Chuck Ramsey, who is the president of the Sonoma County Pride Organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it very much.
And we'll be back with more right after this.
People living with HIV and AIDS in Sonoma County. 500 of them don't know they have it, so neither do their partners. If you've ever suspected you've been exposed to HIV and want to know whether you're carrying the virus that could lead to AIDS, there's a place you can be tested for free, confidentially, and anonymously with results in just 20 minutes. Call face-to-face at 544-1581 or visit f2f.org. We want you to know your status.
And that brings us to the end of our hour. My thanks to all of our amazing guests tonight. Don't forget to join us at Sonoma County Pride in just 2 weeks, June 4th and 5th in Guerneville. Your Outbeat Radio team will be there on Sunday at the festival, taping our annual Live at Pride radio show, and we'd love to have you join us. Tune in next Sunday night for an Outbeat Extra. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio 91. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us.
Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia, exclusively for KRCB Radio. You can listen to our shows on demand, on iTunes, and on our website at outbeatnews.com. And be sure to follow us all week long on our Facebook page and Twitter feed for the latest LGBT news from here in the North Bay and beyond.